Screw it. Here we go.
You know, as Bitcoiners, we've all kind of realized that the system is full of shit, right? That the system is like kind of, you know, not really indicative of what the overall, you know, market is, right? Like the stock market isn't indicative of the economy. But, you know, if you look at the stock market last year in 23, the S&P 500 was up more than it was in 2020, which was over 20%. So, you know, I still think that the market's still going to have a lot of this delusion going on.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps. Welcome back to High Hash Rate. As you know, we've partnered with Bitbox, makers of the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. The Bitbox O2 is a secure, open source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallet with the best user experience in the industry. You can use the promo code HIGHHASHRATE to get 5% off your purchase or go to bitbox.swiss/HIGHHASHRATE, no spaces. Bitbox has great customer support, and if you DM me on Twitter or Noster, I'm always available to answer your questions about self-custody and UTXO management. I'm high tonight as well. But tonight, we're talking to Brandon. Brandon is an advisor at the Bitcoin Advisor. He's the host of Bitcoin Podcast, which I've been on. It was about a month ago, so you can check that episode out. He's also the host of the Macro Insights podcast, and he writes the Green Candle Investments newsletter. So, Brandon, what's up, dude? Did I cover everything?
Yeah,
You're a busy dude.
You make me sound like I'm a big deal, dude. I appreciate that. But yeah,
well, those are your works, man. That's proof of work.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on here, fellas. I'm excited to talk a little coin here with you guys and be on your show.
For sure, dude. We're coming up to the end of March now. So the first quarter of the year was pretty crazy. It was crazy for sports. Michigan, if you guys know, I'm a big Michigan fan, and the Lions actually won a playoff game. But what more related to what we were talking about, Bitcoin fucking soared, the ETFs passed. You went to Bitcoin Atlantis in Madeira. Like that's a pretty badass couple of months, man. How's Q1 been for you?
Yeah, man, it's been a while. It's been a whirlwind, to say the very least. I'm trying to think. I feel like I went somewhere in January too. I just can't even remember. But I went to London for a week, like the London area. I stayed with the Bitcoin racing team up there. I filmed a little video with them. It's pinned on my Twitter, so if you guys haven't seen it, it's kind of like recreating the Ricky Bobby scene where he flips a car and starts running around in his boxers. So I partnered with Annie's for Bitcoin and Bitcoin Racing there.
Oh shit!
And then went to Madeira for a week. That was an amazing conference. There was a bunch of people out there. Talked with Sailor for a bit, asked him to come on the pod, and he's like, yeah, sure, shoot me a DM. And I'm like, brother, I should be like 30 at this point, but I'll keep shooting.
Dude, keep doing it.
I haven't gotten a hold of him. Maybe he'll hear this. I don't know. But yeah, man. And then I actually just got back from Austin like a week ago too, because I was in startup day for Pleb Lab. So,
okay.
Yeah, man, I've been bouncing around a lot.
That's a lot of connections to a...
Yeah, so I mean, I'm trying.
That's a lot of connections to a fuck ton of Bitcoin companies. Like you, that's a real.
You were on a network tour, dude.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a crazy amount of connections with all these different Bitcoin companies.
Yeah, man, I'm trying to do the damn thing this year. I mean, my goal is to basically, I'll put it out there. My goal is to get Green Candle up and running enough where I can go for it full time now. So unfortunately, I'm still working a full time job. But yeah, I want to just kind of go for it. So this year, I'm like really kind of, you know, I'm going to go to the Canadian Bitcoin Conference in May, and I'm going to go to Nashville, of course. That's kind of as far as I've planned. I've talked to a few of the other conferences that I really want to go, but to be honest, I just don't have like the funding behind it right now. Cause I'm just kind of
right. Yeah, for sure.
Going for it. So,
you can write it off as a business expense, right? in taxes.
I mean, it's been a lot of business expenses lately, to say the least. But I mean, I think it'll pay off in the end. I enjoy doing it, and you know, I get to connect with a lot of Bitcoiners for sure. And you know, it's something that I wanted, you know, pursue full time. So I think, you know, kind of the investment to it and the proof of work at the end will show people that, like, hey, you know, I was doing this all part time kind of stuff, and once I go full time, it'll be off to the races.
I'm curious. Was your schedule this busy like past few years? Is this a new thing? Like, how long have you been pursuing this? And hosting the podcast.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, I've been doing the podcast. So, I started Green Candle about 3 years ago now at this point. So, I kind of started it with the newsletter and the Green Candle Twitter. I started it with a buddy. We did it for about a year. We both got jobs in like different spaces, I guess. We started in like April, maybe. And then April 21. And then in November, we both got different jobs. I got a remote job, so it allowed me to do this stuff a little bit more. And then he got a remote job, but it was in the Bitcoin space, and they didn't want him to do content. So I was like, well, I like it. And he's like, you know, you got kind of the personality to do the podcasting stuff. Like, why don't you try that? He was always kind of pushing me for that. And so finally, I was like, all right, you know what? I'll do it. And then, yeah, he got the job. So I was just like, all right, well, I like the podcasting stuff. I'll kind of keep doing that, and I'll just interview people. And I've always gone to like a conference here or there. Of course, I did like Bitcoin Miami. I've gone to that. Maybe I guess this will be one to Nashville this year, but that'll be my third time going to this
one.
I went to the Canadian one last year. I went to Bitblock Boom last year. So, I mean, I did a couple of them last year. But definitely not to the extent of, you know, going off and doing something like this for a couple weeks. I think, you know, the plan is to kind of travel around a little bit more this year, and hopefully kind of stay in Nashville for like a week or so as well, to be around there, during the conference and everything too. So using all the vacation days I've got to go and go to Bitcoin stuff.
And what is your, like, what is your background? What is your day job that kind of supported you, kind of launched you into doing what you're doing now?
Yeah, so I've been kind of all over the place. So I have 2 degrees in engineering. So my first job was a forensic engineering role, which deals with like a lot of, I guess, like insurance liability. You know, I was driving around the state of Florida. A lot of people basically like, it's kind of fiat if you really think about it, to be honest, because it's like, you know, I was biomechanical. So a lot of people dealing with slip and fall injuries or car accidents. So people kind of trying to play the system and sue companies if they got in a car accident. Florida is like the most litigious state in the country. So it's a lot of people trying to basically like sue insurance companies, which, you know, their insurance stuff are, that's probably the reason why insurance prices are so high and insurance companies are pretty stingy in my eyes, because I saw kind of the other side of it. Then I got like kind of some data analytics positions. I've gone through a couple companies now, and I'm just like in the data analytics space right now, kind of using like my coding experience from engineering. To get into that now, yeah.
Can I ask, you said it's very fiat. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, so I mean, it's like, you know, here's a prime example, right? So like a big part of the job, when I was there for 3 years, and every other company I've been at, I've been there for like a year max. So I've bounced around a lot since then. So this job was kind of like, I guess, you know, my first kind of real experience in working a traditional job, I guess. So, and then of course I went through COVID there as well. So, you know, when I first got there, it was like, you know, my background's in motion capture, and I wrote my master's thesis. I wrote my master's thesis on the development of quarterback throwing mechanics. So I thought I was going to get into like more of like the sports realm of things. and then I realize you probably need a PhD, and then you're going to go into the MLB and they're going to pay you nothing. And then you're going to live in, you know, a AAA city or a AA city, and then just kind of, you know, bounce around, and then you don't really have good job security. So I found this forensic engineering job, which was basically wanting to bring that aspect into the courtroom. So basically, you know, in the court of law, you know, like an insurer, a prime example is like, all right, you sit at a stoplight, right? You look at your phone, maybe you're checking Twitter, maybe you're watching this podcast or something. You take your foot off the brake a little bit. You tap the person in front of you going 5 miles an hour. All of a sudden, that person needs 20 back surgeries and is suing you for $100,000. So, basically, and that's a, you know, that's a pretty common occurrence. And normally in those cases, like, an insurance company is going to pay the person like, you know, 15, 20 grand to fuck off, basically. And I don't know if I can swear here. Sorry.
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
You're okay to swear.
But yeah, so basically they'll pay them a little bit to fuck off. And then, you know, in the end, you know, usually the times I got called in where people were getting too greedy. And that's just kind of the reality of the situation. And a lot of these people, you know, I mean, you know, I'm in Tampa. You could think of like the major amusement parks that were near. That
oh, for sure.
Close to near me that, you know, people would basically slip and fall and then, you know,
right.
Try to sue those major companies for, you know, high dollars. And, you know,
that's right. Like when you're in Florida, right? Like I've been there so many times, Tampa, South Florida. It is crazy. Next time you're there, if you're listening, pay attention to the billboards when you're driving down the highway. It is a lawyer advertisement. Every other billboard, it's like injury lawyer, divorce lawyer, like
hell yeah.
Insurance schemes, too. Medicare lawyers.
For sure,
it's like Florida, like what you're talking about. Like it's the most litigious state. It is crazy
100%.
How many lawyers are down there.
And yeah, geez, like I mean, nuts. I have like a free Hulu account, right, with the Spotify that I use. So like every now and then I throw on Hulu.
Oh sure.
And there I still get commercials, and every commercial that I get, it knows I'm in Florida because of my. You know, my Wi-Fi or whatever, and I get commercials for whatever law firm it is, an injury law firm. I mean, those guys, like, they you know, I mean, you could hear the major, like, even the major podcast now, like, I listen to Pardon My Take a lot, which is, you know, the number one sports podcast, Barstool, like, Morgan & Morgan partners with them.
Yeah, Morgan & Morgan.
But, like, if you drive around Florida, like, Morgan & Morgan's everywhere, you know? And,
right.
Like, I don't know, like, the first apartment I lived in, which is where I made a lot of friends. They were all like, half of them were like defense attorneys as well. So there's a very big school down here too. It's called Stetson.
Right. Big law schools.
Yeah, big law
schools.
What's
the concentration about?
Of lawyers to people? I don't know.
Dude, it's like
place.
4-1. No.
Why do you think lawyers like concentrate in this
it's
one
just,
fucking
no,
area?
Well, it's the law. It's the law of the state. It's the way that the system in Florida works. It's the incentive system in Florida. So like a lot of people, maybe I don't know if you agree with this or not, but like when you think about the politics in the United States in the last couple of years since COVID especially, right? Like it's been this Florida, Texas versus California, how they handled COVID, how they handle everything. And Florida's like, you know, DeSantis is really polarizing, right? And it's like he's passing all these gender laws and these laws about stand your ground and like can't say shit in school. People say they're banning books, yada, yada. It's all it is it's inviting more lawsuits and more lawyers. And it's just like the craziness and like the antagonistic nature of Florida is just, it's all lawyers, dude. That's what happens when you get a place full of lawyers, a bunch of old lawyers.
Yeah, 100%. And then too, like no state income tax, right? So lawyers, like big attorneys from like New York or wherever, you know, DC area, they want to come down here after they've had a lot of success. So they charge a lot of money. And then Miami has, of course, like a lot of money as well, right? But Miami also has a lot of people who don't have money, who want to have money because they see all the people that have money. And so what do? They sue at the drop of a hat. So, yeah, it was a very interesting job, but it kind of like, I mean, my first boss, like, I mean, he was a great mentor and manager to me. And I think like the place he messed up with me, I think, is he told me basically like we charged an hourly rate. So how like lawyers charge, they charge an hourly rate. Us as like expert witnesses would charge an hourly rate. And I was trying to negotiate, you know, my salary to be increased with COVID because, you know, of course, like everybody, like initially they said, you know, no raises and whatnot. And then our company had the best year it's ever had. And, you know, you can earn a commission at this job, which was pretty uncommon for an engineering job. And I, you know, when you first kind of get there, you don't really earn the commission. So the salary is really important when you're first starting. Obviously, it's a little bit higher than probably like a sales job starting one. But, you know, I was kind of trying to negotiate with them and I was like, hey, you know, everybody's making all this money. They're printing all this money. They're giving out money like PPP loans, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, PPP loans, another big one.
Yeah, just like raise my hourly rate a little bit to like basically where everybody else at my position is. And I would do the exact same thing. You could pay me like $30,000 or $40,000 more and I would still make the company more money. And that was kind of my argument. And then, you know, of course I asked for a lot more than I expected. But they ended up giving me a little bump and then you know, I got a remote job that paid me a lot more and I stayed at home. So
it's
kind of nature of the time, I guess.
I guess maybe you can tell me if this jives with what you felt, but it almost feels like you were working in the thick of this just litigious fiat lawsuit, lawyers everywhere, like dystopian situation. And you were trying to like work your ass off and like actually put in the work and do the right things and fucking and bust your ass, work overtime, right? To get, you know, just enough raise to keep up with COVID. And you're watching these motherfuckers just scam the system and just completely suck up to the cantillionaire teat. And you're like, this is broken. Is that the, like the realization you had? Is that your Bitcoin moment? Cause that's like what I feel like it would do to me.
Not quite. Honestly, I was like orange pilled before I started. So my Bitcoin.
So you noticed it.
Yeah. But what I thought, I guess like I could get into my Bitcoin story here in a bit, but what I thought basically is like, you know, I would drive around all the time, right? Because we would have to go to these inspection sites. And so I was going to Jacksonville once a week, which is a 3-hour drive there, go out, do an inspection of a vehicle or something in the Florida sun, take 2 or 3 hours, then drive back. Right. So that's, you know, with traffic, probably like, you know, 10-hour day. And, you know, I have a dog or whatever, too. And it's like, all right, you know, driving back after being out in the sun in the middle of the Florida heat, you know, having to eat like Burger King because I'm driving and I need to squeeze in a meal or something like that here or there. You know, I was just getting to the point where I was like, okay, like, you know, I'm working really hard. And, you know, as somebody, you know, growing up, like my parents are entrepreneurs, but, you know, they always kind of said, you know, whatever you put into it, you're going to get out, you know, you'll make a lot of money. Like if you work really hard, that's always like kind of the mantra that I felt. And so I was working really hard and I was like, well, like, you know, I'm not making commission. I'm working really hard. I'm still at the bottom of the barrel. Like, you know, the job that you kind of described initially has changed a little bit. And I don't think it was like my manager's fault or anything. It was a little bit because of COVID.
But can I just say something?
Because yeah, go.
What you were talking about earlier about lawyers. Can I just say this?
Yeah.
It made me think of these like law warriors, like these dudes that could like go out and like fight the battle of language with each other to like.
Yeah, that's true. Arguing like, oh, do you said this? Is that what you
for
meant?
The common
no, that's
folk,
not what I meant.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
They're a bit mercenary if you're a lawyer. Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're interesting. I mean, I did a lot of like networking events with lawyers, too, because like that was kind of how like I don't know. And they I don't know, man, they're a wild bunch to say the least. I feel like they work really hard. They're really stressed out. So they like to party. So
yeah, they do like to drink.
Yeah.
They're all the lawyers I know are alcoholics.
Yeah.
For the most part. That's they're also all the politicians are lawyers, so that tells you about who, you know, what they're like.
Exactly. Yeah, but I mean, like back to the you know, kind of like my words, almost like my origin story of like how that kind of came about. But
No,
I was working really hard in the job. I was driving to Jacksonville.
That's right.
Kind of you know, doing like 10-12 hour days, like working my ass off to try to, you know, make this commission that just really wasn't coming. And so I asked for this raise, and my boss didn't end up giving it to me. And I got a remote job where, you know, I was able to make a lot more. And I, quite frankly, I didn't have to work nearly as hard. So I was like, well, you know, what my parents kind of told me and raised me on, isn't necessarily true, right? That a lot of people, it kind of depends on who you know, the opportunities you get, and, you know, your money's getting devalued too. So like my orange pill story, I kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, was I was driving Uber, like in grad school at the time. And I wanted a little bit of extra beer money. So I was listening to a bunch of like financial podcasts. One of them was We Study Billionaires, the Preston Pysh podcast, before he had the Bitcoin only.
Good doorway.
Right.
And then it was some random like personal finance podcast. I can't really remember which one it was. But they both mentioned Bitcoin within the same week. So I was like, okay, this is kind of a weird coincidence, because one's like kind of like personal finance about saving, the other one's more about investing. So I'll look into it. Looked into it, found an article. It was like, Bitcoin is going up and same with Dogecoin. I'm like, all right, well, I bought and I traded a little bit of that. Everybody got into their little shitcoinery, I think, at some point in time. And I remember I sold the Bitcoin then, and I sold the Doge also as well. But I remember, like, all right, I know that this Dogecoin thing is a meme, right? Maybe I got a little lucky. I made a couple $100. Like, I was in grad school driving Uber. I wasn't making a lot of money. But I remember that, like, all right, I need to look into this more of this Bitcoin thing. And so when I was driving Uber and just driving, I would listen to Bitcoin podcasts. And I would put a little bit into it, a little bit into it. And then, you know, I graduated from my master's in December 2018, and then got my first big boy job out here in Tampa, the forensic engineering one. And every paycheck, I'd just start putting into Bitcoin. I wasn't the smartest at first. I put it into the Robinhood, and I couldn't pull it off initially. Luckily, they switched that up, and I was able to do that. But you know, I started buying it, and then, you know, 2019 comes around and I'm buying it a little bit. And then all of a sudden the COVID crash comes, and it's just like, hey, I'm working for a year, and I saw basically something that I'm investing in go from like 12 to 4,000. Like, what the hell?
It was a gut punch.
Yeah. I'm like, I remember looking at it and I freaked out a little bit, but then I sat back and I thought about it, and I'm like, look, I'm a year or so into working right now. If I'm right, like a lot of smarter people than I am think that they are, you know, when it comes to this Bitcoin thing, then, you know, I guess it's time to put my nuts on the table and start to go for it a little bit. So I doubled up however much I was putting in there at that time. And it was, you know, it's obviously proven to be pretty, pretty nice for me here. But it was definitely kind of an interesting time at that time for me, because it was like, all right, I'm getting a new job. I'm trying to figure out how to make my money go a little bit farther. I had a lot of my friends too, like would, I don't know. I didn't really have any Bitcoin friends at that time. So that's when I kind of started the green candle stuff, because I wanted to put what I had out there out loud, or out in public. So people, you know, I could maybe, I guess, find my tribe, so to speak. But
is that why you started the podcast? So you could find your tribe?
I honestly, selfishly, it was so I could talk to people and just like kind of ask them like questions that I had. Because, you know, I think I like to listen to them, but I also like to have these conversations. And so I wanted to, and I was always interested in money, just in general. Even though I had kind of an engineering background, I always wanted to figure out how I could make my own money that I was earning go farther. So I thought, like, you know, I could talk to the macro people, the professional, like, you know, stock investors, all that kind of stuff, kind of figure out what's going on and why they don't think that Bitcoin's necessarily going to work. And then I could talk to the Bitcoiners and kind of see what's going on in that world. And, you know, as obviously I've gotten deeper and deeper, it's like just kind of justified my Bitcoin thesis. And but I always think that there's, you know, it's an interesting kind of, you know, I mean, we alluded to it a little bit earlier, right? The ETF just passed. The traditional finance world and the Bitcoin world, although it's kind of seems separate, it's always going to be intertwined, right? I mean, like Bitcoin,
right,
no matter what, is always going to be intertwined with you know, something to do with like real estate or interest rates or like, you know, tech stocks, like all these kind of things. Like, I think they're just, it's just all intertwined. And for me, it was kind of like, all right, I can kind of, instead of going to school and learning about it, I could just talk to experts in the field, and all I got to do is stick a camera and a microphone in their face and ask for an hour of their time. So, yeah, that was kind of like, I guess it's like kind of a selfish reason, but, you know, I enjoy having these conversations. I think like they're fun for me. So,
no, that's a really good point. So, I think we have a similar background, and I've talked about it before on the podcast about how I came to Bitcoin. And it was, I had heard of it. I knew I'd even bought it for Silk Road stuff like way before, but I'd never thought of it outside of that context. It was just like, you know, like drug money or just like this digital coin. But then Preston brought it up on his podcast. And I listened to that podcast like every week at the time. And I really valued like their insight and the way that they looked, because I was at the time like I was trying to invest my money, and I was really into traditional finance. Follow that stuff. Like, obviously, listen to the macro podcasts, and that just something about that touch point from somebody I really, identified with, brought me into Bitcoin. But you mentioned like listen to these other podcasts. That's how I learned so much about finance, so much about Bitcoin, with these podcasts. And the insights that these people shared with me, like through their interviews. And it's like the opportunity to ask them the questions yourself and have like these little micro mentorships. Like you mentioned it, like, how do I convince these really brilliant people to talk to me and to answer my questions? Oh, well, I'll give them a platform. I'll create a podcast. And then boom, that's how you do it. Now you're getting to speak with all these people. Like you said, you don't have to go to a university and hear some professor that you didn't pick yourself give you the spiel, right? You talk to somebody that you've sought out based on their reputation and what they're teaching or what they're sharing. I think that's really cool. And I think that's kind of what we kind of did with this podcast to an extent. So to answer Mike's question, maybe you didn't go into the podcast seeking out your tribe, but in hindsight, that was part of it.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, I mean, like, you don't really think about it when you get into the podcasting realm, but it's really just networking, right? I mean, it's like you go up, you talk to these people. I go up, and then it gives me like kind of an opening to, you know, kind of go and talk with people at conferences too. It's like, hey, you know, like, I'm Brandon from Green Candle. Maybe they recognize the brand. If not, like, I kind of tell them, you know, a little bit about what I do. And, you know, then I'm like, hey, you know, can I get follow up or can I get contact info so I can, you know, have a conversation or potentially have you in a podcast or something like that. And then I always try to connect people too. Like, you know, I mean, like, I don't know if you guys knew somebody that was on my podcast or you knew a company or something like that. I always try to connect and like help people out, because I think, you know, one thing I've learned about the Bitcoin space is that everybody's really, really open to doing that. Traditional finance, it's like, it's kind of a mixed bag. It's
right.
Kind of interesting there. You know, that's just kind of the nature of the beast there. But, you know, I
think, like, we all want to talk about it. You know, we all want to talk about this thing.
Yeah.
I think that's what it
is. Right. It's value for value. This, like, what he's talking about is like this value for value. It's getting to know somebody, giving them a platform, giving them a new audience. And then, you know, because of that connection, being able to connect him with, or that guest with another company or with another person who has another platform, so they can get more audience, they can get more coverage. And it's a form of value for value. It's, I'm going to take your time. I'm going to get your wisdom that you've gained from all this study and research that you've done. And if you give that to me, I'll trade, you know, what I can give you is just more people to listen to it and more people to be interested.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, everybody just kind of wants to spread the message too. So, you know, I've been very lucky to, you know, I run into people like yourself and, you know, others that have been, you know, come on the pod and everything like that. It's just, you know, it's been a really cool experience, and hoping it keeps going, and some big things are ahead here.
One of the things, so you have like the two podcasts, right? So you split it between the Bitcoin and macro. So I'm wondering which, like, what's the chicken or the egg? Was it the passion for Bitcoin or the passion for macro? It sounds like it was the macro first and then the Bitcoin. Yeah.
Yeah.
It and was, then you realize they're the same, right? But
yeah,
still.
I mean, it was, I mean, it was like, you know, it was initially just kind of like learning like, okay, like how does the stock market work? And like traditional finance kind of stuff. Like, I mean, the first thing I kind of did was for personal finance stuff was I downloaded this app called Acorns. I don't have any affiliation with them anymore. I don't use them, but it's kind of a cool little app where if you spend 75 cents, it rounds that up to a dollar and invests that 25 cents. And so that's kind of what I got in learning into that. And then I kind of, you know, like I said, I was just kind of interested in the traditional finance world and, you know, Preston, like, brilliant, and he can, you know, obviously talk way over my head. So I had to try to learn a lot of these things and try to break it down and make it, you know, a lot easier for me to understand. And that was, like, kind of part of it, too, was like, hey, you know, Preston, as brilliant as he is and as a lot of things that they talk about on that show, I have, like, I'm lost, like, in half the time. So I need to do some more of my own research. I need to figure out some of these things. And, you know, I don't want to like limit myself to just one opinion of one guy. Like I want to understand a few different things. So I found like, you know, a few other different podcasts. And, you know, I think that there's, I don't know, like maybe there's some space there for somebody like, you know, somebody without a financial background to kind of come in and ask a lot of these questions. Cause I think.
Right. Because the person, it's the person listening. It's not your job as a host, right? Like as the person listening. Or for your audience is not to be like the expert necessarily, not to be the guy with all the degrees, worked on Wall Street, knows the ins and outs, all the technical things, all the jargon, right? But it's to ask those people questions in a way that people who are like normal, like us, or like we're plebs or whoever, like, you know, just not quite the sophisticated person, we can get our questions asked in a way that we understand it. And it's like, all right, that's how we're getting like value from this conversation. It's not, it's like Peter McCormick's the same way. People give him a hard time. His podcast is valuable, not because he's an expert on anything. He's, you know, he plays dumb. I mean, sometimes he is dumb. Sometimes like he's playing dumb, but because he's reflection of his audience, if they're noobs, you know, it's like he gets the best type of answers from his guests.
Well, he's curious, right? I mean, Joe Rogan, perfect example, right? I mean, he's learned a lot throughout his podcast. He's got like the number one podcast in the world. But, you know, if you listen to a lot of his stuff, it's just like he's just like actively listening, just kind of genuinely curious about what these people are talking about. And he brings them on because he's genuinely curious about what they do. So like, you know, it's either that or he's having a fun conversation with a comedian. And I think it's the same way with Peter, and a lot of these other, you know, great, podcast hosts where they're just like genuinely kind of curious. Like, I mean, I don't really, you know, I mean, I don't really know too many where I feel like I like to listen to where it's like, okay, they have a list of like 10 questions where they,
Exactly.
I kind of like the ones that's like, oh, well, you know, the host kind of thought about this while they were talking about this sort of thing. And that's kind of where the conversation went. And, you know, sometimes it makes it almost feel like, hey, you're sitting there, you know, whether it's at the table or, you know, I don't know, or
right,
or something like that. You're just kind of sitting there all having a conversation.
Right. It's like when you're at a conference, you can't be at a conference all the time. They're all over the world. They're expensive to go to. You got to travel. You got shit to do in your normal life, but you can kind of get something out of it with a conversation like this.
Yeah,
you know what I mean,
100%.
That's what. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Well, no, that brings up a good point. I mean, this all made me think about is like, no matter what, even if you don't have a podcast, if you do have a podcast, having a podcast, you know, we're all podcasters. We're all talking to each
other. This is so meta.
But I think, and we're talking about people who have podcasts, like Preston Pish, right? Everyone's getting into podcasts. But the thing that made me think about it is like Preston Pish.
Our listeners are podcasters.
That's true. The Preston Pish opens the door for you and you, Dan, to Bitcoin, right?
Right.
And that's really, that's the important part is that we, as all podcasters are, you know, they're just people trying to get their voice out. We could be the people that open the door to Bitcoin. For other people,
just based on our different perspectives.
100%. And it's like too, like your different backgrounds, maybe something that you do or your personality or something resonates with somebody a little bit different. You never know, right? You never know, like, kind of how these things just come about and, like, how people find whoever they like or whatever. Like, maybe it's the algorithm. You never really know, like, kind of how you can impact somebody until, like, you kind of travel around and then maybe somebody was like, hey, like, you know, you were one of the first podcasts I listened to, and it was, you know, it's really cool to hear somebody say
that
something like
that. Is always shock. It's always shocking to me to hear. It's like,
yeah, when people say stuff like that or they tweet out the episode or something like that, I'm like, wow, people actually listen to me, like, talking to these people, and they enjoy it. I mean, it's
everybody's got a podcast. It's almost like you got to start drawing a distinction at this point. It's like, Bitcoiners are just hanging out. There's just like, they admit in podcast form, it's just hanging out with other Bitcoiners and just like, hey, if you want to listen to what the fuck we talked about, it's on an RSS feed, so check it out.
Yeah, exactly.
So typically on this show, I think it's even in our tagline, like, what we talk about Bitcoin outside the fiat price or whatever. And we don't talk that much about macro. But I personally, like, that's one of my favorite things. Like, it's one of my favorite topics. I listen to so many macro podcasts. So we're going to break the tradition and talk about it a little bit here.
Oh, I like
on it. Your mat. Yeah. So I guess I'll just jump right in. Let's see what you're thinking about the macro landscape right now. Like, we talked about how crazy of a year it's been, the crazy inflows coming from these ETFs. It just keeps coming. The outflows coming from GBTC. Maybe that's, you know, balancing things out and screwing up the price. But that's a little bit of context of what's going on. But I'm just curious of what your thoughts, like, what are you seeing? What's exciting you in the macro?
100%. So, I guess, like, I guess I kind of see, you know, I made four macro predictions this year. So I guess I'll go through them. At the beginning, as one is, I think that the Federal Reserve is not going to cut interest rates until Q4. So they're going to delay it. Right. I mean, if you guys have been following, I know you, maybe not a lot of your listeners follow along to the interest rates and that kind of, like, the fiat realm. But the Federal Reserve raised interest rates at the fastest pace ever, basically, a couple years ago, and they've kept them very high. Some might call it a pivot because they've, you know, quit increasing. They basically have stopped raising interest rates. But I don't think that they're going to bring them back down until late this year, probably close to election time is when I imagine they'll start to cut. I wouldn't even be surprised unless if it's 25. But just because of that, a little wrinkle of it being an election year, I think that
oh, yeah. I've heard a lot, you know, several people say that they think if the Fed's going to cut, they have to do it by, like, the June meeting, which they're probably not going to do just because the conditions aren't there for it. And if they don't do it then, they'll probably wait till December or next year because it's not that they want to help Biden or hurt Biden or Trump or vice versa. It's just that they don't want to be blamed or by either side for affecting the outcome. So they're just going to stay out of it. And right now, raising rates lowering rates doesn't seem to make any sense. Inflation's kind of a problem, right? Their yield curve's still not fixed. There's still all kinds of problems. They got to issue a lot of debt, and the interest rates are just killing us on the national debt growth. Are they painted into a corner now? I mean, you said it's like a capitulation. They haven't capitulated quite yet, but it seems like they have either any choice they can make is going to have to be a capitulation.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you at this point too. And to me, I think, you know, if you ask, it's interesting because, right, I mean, we lined it out a little bit earlier. If I talk to Bitcoiners, they think inflation, you know, is still running rampant. You know, the consumer is not doing super well, right? Like, the jobs reports might be false. There's credit card debt is going to, like, all-time highs. Personal savings is going low. But if you ask the traditional finance people, everything's fine. There's peaches and daisies everywhere. So it's kind of interesting. It's probably somewhere in the middle where, you know, obviously we printed 40% of the money supply. I feel like, you know, if anybody who's listened to a Bitcoin podcast probably heard that number at this point in time. You know, we went through all this massive amounts of money printing, and now we're basically playing damage control. And so, you know, the Federal Reserve is run by humans, right? So what's going to happen? They're probably going to have some human error. Everybody thinks Powell probably raised a little bit too quickly. I'll probably cut a little late and I'll probably cut a little too quickly or do that. But, you know, a cut isn't necessarily a bullish thing. Every time, if you look back historically, every time the Federal Reserve has cut, it leads to a recession. So I wouldn't necessarily be like all gung ho on a Federal Reserve cut. And I think that you explained it perfectly, like, right? There's going to be after some sort of capitulation. I think, you know, the government has a spending problem. It's not necessarily an influx problem. They're going to try to find ways to tax more people here. But at the end of the day, it's you know, still an issue, right? I mean, Jerome Powell is not an idiot. He knows that inflation is still high, although traditional finance is like, hey, everything's fine. But that leads me to my second prediction. I still think the stock market is going to rip and roll throughout this entire year. Because, you know, as Bitcoiners, we've all kind of realized that the system is full of shit, right? That the system is like kind of, you know, not really indicative of what the overall, you know, market is, right? Like the stock market isn't indicative of the economy. But, you know, if you look at the stock market last year in 23, the S&P 500 was up more than it was in 2020, which was over 20%. So, you know, I still think that the market's still going to have a lot of this delusion going on, and that's going to make the stock market rip and roll. And then, you know, on the flip side of things too, I think real estate's still going to go up throughout this year,
yeah,
because it's something that it's a
pre-election. Is that your third prediction, the real estate?
Yeah, that's my third prediction. Real estate's still going to go up because, you know, interest rates are going to theoretically start to come down towards the end of this year. So mortgage rates are going to come down and a lot of people have been waiting to buy houses, but the supply has been very low. And like the new builds have been kind of slowed because I don't know if you guys remember during the COVID time, like lumber prices and everything was like super high. So home builds and new home builds and everything like that has been, you know, pretty low. And then 60%, I believe, of mortgages are beneath, I think, 4% or maybe 3%, somewhere around there. And, you know, the current rate we're sitting at, I think, is like at 6.5% or something like that. So
that right,
ways away from that.
And I think the people think that this can't continue, that it's unsustainable. And, you know, over some time horizon, they're correct. But I think a lot of people misjudge how long it really can go on. Because if you look at, it started in places like San Francisco, Florida's experiencing it, New York. The real estate prices, rent prices, just the price cost of living is just skyrocketed. And it's in some cities, it's very difficult. Even with a really good job, you can make six figures and you still need a roommate, right? Or in an apartment somewhere. Like guys at Google are making $250,000 a year. They live in, you know, a small flat together. They're not living in homes. They can't afford that. I mean, one of the guys that plays the quarterback in the Super Bowl can barely afford to live comfortably in San Francisco. Doesn't even make $1 million a year. But this has been going on for years, and it's slowly moving to other cities, and then it's just going to creep in. Like where even smaller towns, you can't afford a home if you didn't get one before COVID or during COVID, or you can barely afford to keep up with, you know, Des Moines, Iowa's cost of living. It'll just keep going, and that could last for years, right? So it's, a lot of people are like, this is just going to break. I'll be able to get a house. The prices will crash. And, you know, do you feel like that's something that they can look forward to next year? Or is it a worry that this could just keep going?
Yeah. So I don't really think that, I mean, we're not going to see like 2008 type of crash, right? Because that was just like banks.
They won't let it.
Yeah. Just lending like that. The only thing that I could see potentially happening is commercial real estate kind of going down. Obviously, you know,
yeah,
a lot of office buildings, you know, people flocking away from cities that you name, like San Francisco and everything like that, working remotely. There is a little bit push back to working in the office, but, you know, I mean, and commercial real estate is such a small sector of like the overall economy that's going to affect just a small number of people. I think like housing, I don't know, man. I can't think of a way to be like bearish on like that going forward. The only thing I could think of is like the U.S. is going to do something drastic or not, like creating products that basically make it so you can afford a new home, which basically would make you in debt forever, whether that's increasing that 30-year mortgage to a 40 or a 50-year mortgage, or, you know, changing the, you know, there's right now there's like a 3.5% down for a first-time home buyer, maybe making a 0% down. I know Rocket Mortgage was a company that kind of floated that. From what I hear, they basically just charge you fees out the ass. But, you know, a lot of things like that, I would imagine, would start to come out here in the next few years. But I just don't really see, like, you know, housing really hurting. I mean, you can look at some numbers, and it's maybe like in some pockets, right?
Sure.
But, I mean, like,
maybe some places that go overheated.
Yeah. And like,
I had the blow off top.
Yeah. I have like, I don't know. I was hosting a Twitter space the other week, and they, it was like a more on like a real estate centric one. And some of the people in there, they posted this like numbers published by the government of like cities that, you know, the percentage of how much real estate has gone up in each one of these metropolitan areas. It's like Tampa in the past 5 years has gone up like 90%. So, I mean, like, you know, I obviously,
it's just mostly, it's just going to be like the places where there's the most leverage and the most debt, like those are going to be the places that snap first, if they snap. But it's going to take a while. Like I said, commercial real estate, residential real estate, unless people are just over leveraged and they can't afford like the 5% interest rates or whatever it is, they'll just come unwinded. But the one of the questions I had was, or one of the thoughts I had was that the people in the Bitcoin community who necessarily don't come here for the macro, they get kind of bored with the macro conversation, and it's, they just like, they want to talk about how Bitcoin is affecting things. But it's important, I think, and maybe this is why you like macro too. It's, you can see these patterns in the rest of the economy, the rest of the financial world, and it affects Bitcoin, and it can have impacts on Bitcoin. The cost of energy because of inflation, if gas and oil and uranium and just all the just however people are getting electricity, like that could affect the miners. They would necessarily be able to support a robust mining industry. It might affect how much the miners are selling, and it dampens the price. So it's like, what do you look for in some of your macro analysis to just, and think about how's this going to tie back to Bitcoin a few months down the road that people aren't expecting?
Yeah. Well, that brings me to my fourth prediction I have here. And that's, so you set it up nicely, man. You tossed me a little alley-oop. Now I can play it at home. But I predicted this. Honestly, like I did an end of year show with Julian, Kinetic Finance, Julian Figuerella, great guy. But I was a little unsure of this prediction at the time. I actually made a bet with him that the bet is that Bitcoin will go to 100K by the end of this year. The time I made this bet, Bitcoin was at 40K, so I feel a little bit better now sitting at 70. But, you know, what I was looking at was, at that time, it was like the potential of the ETFs coming in. You know, interest rates are going to fall towards the end of this year. And usually when that happens, people go on to more risk on assets. And what is a risk on asset? It's usually something pretty volatile. You know, they think big, like traditional finance groups in Bitcoin, like Tesla, Nvidia, like these kind of like tech stocks, so to speak. Obviously, Bitcoin's different than those. We all here listening know that. But, you know, that's kind of how it's viewed. So traditional finance is coming in. We got the halving coming up. And, you know, the ETFs, just the amount of inflows coming in to an I mean, I think I saw on some random Wednesday when Bitcoin was going up like $5 or $10, you know, $1,000 that day. It was just kind of like the ETFs were FOMOing in. Like I think in the BlackRock ETF, they bought 10,000 Bitcoin alone, which was like equal to like $6 billion in just one of the 11 ETFs in the US alone. So I think we haven't seen the amount of FOMO that traditional finance can bring in, right? I mean, we've had basically the plebs. This is the first time ever, I think, at least in my lifetime, that you know, a group of plebs and underground people can basically front run Wall Street, front run, you know, nation states, front run basically a bunch of people through Bitcoin. And now they've come in and, you know, they're trying to scoop in and catch up. And, you know, how are they going to catch up? They're just going to keep pouring more and more dollars in there. And people are going to be looking for a way to get their money out of fiat currencies. And, you know, I think more and more people are learning about Bitcoin, BlackRock giving the ETF, you know, obviously I don't, you know, you guys, you're one of your sponsors is like a hardware wallet, right? So, I mean, it's like, I'm not sitting here saying buy Bitcoin through an ETF because I don't think that's the whole point of it, right? But, you know, I think it gives...
Some people will.
Yeah, and it gives people new avenues for it. And I think it puts validity behind it, right? I mean, like, my mom thought I was crazy about buying Bitcoin. And right. then all of a sudden, Elon Musk said that they'll accept Teslas for Bitcoin like a few years ago. And she's like, hey, you know, Elon's pretty smart. So maybe you're onto something. So, I mean, it just is like, it's another touch point for the average person. And I think it brings in, you know, more and more people. And so I think like from the macro perspective, like it's just like the supply and demand here is just like, you know, obviously the supply is shrinking in half every single day, or it's going to be shrinking in half every single day in what, a couple weeks here now. But, you know, I mean, it's just like where else is this going to go? It's going to have to go up. And I'm very bullish on the way Bitcoin's looking out and the way Bitcoin's positioning itself to potentially diverge from like the overall market. Because I think, you know, like I said, I think everything's going up this year. What I think will be interesting is 25. Maybe I put like my little tinfoil hat on here is that if Trump gets elected, I think like maybe the market might crash there in 25. And that's how they kind of point the finger. Because usually, you know, when a recession occurs or something happens like, you know, a big financial crisis, it's, you know, the previous party's fault. And then the person in charge has to just kind of clean up the mess.
Right.
They change parties. So that's what I kind of foresee happening here.
Right. And it's some people talk about this transition to hyper Bitcoinization when everybody flees from the dollar to Bitcoin. And I think that happens just not like in this flash event, right? It's like this long drawn out process, maybe decades. That maybe you look back 100 years from now, a couple hundred years from now, it's like, oh man, they just went from the dollar to Bitcoin. And it was like, boom, new world. But I think it starts with like, with all these ETFs, it will just, the other ETFs that the like BlackRock and Fidelity own, like they'll start buying Bitcoin in that ETF. So it'll be like the Global Strategic Fund or like the Global Income Fund or the Global Bond Fund. And they'll buy a little Bitcoin here. And it's just kind of society slowly adding 1%, 2%, 3% to their Bitcoin just to hedge against the dollar until it just kind of, it takes off and it outbalances it. It's, you know, more than half. And then from there, it'll just go all the way. And that'll be a really
like,
exciting
like
time.
Like an Elon rocket ship, you know, just.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. That's just kind of my take. I think that you're kind of saying the same thing and I'm just talking about it more like high.
Well, I mean, no, it's you're nailing it on the head too, and it's like more, you know, nation states are starting to develop it, right? We obviously saw El Salvador. Now I wouldn't be surprised if Argentina kind of gets on board, and then it's like, okay, well, we had one country do it and be pretty successful. Now we're going to have another one potentially come in and be pretty successful, and it's just like this snowball effect, right? But I agree with you. I think it's going to be kind of like gradually over time, at least for. You know, maybe it's bearish compared to like some Bitcoin maxis that are like listening here. But I think like the best overall situation is just to kind of slowly merge into a Bitcoin standard, opposed to the current system just kind of failing like all of a sudden overnight. And then we have blood in the streets for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Like, I don't know how long it would necessarily take to rebuild that. But if we could have just a bunch of small communities kind of build up, get on a Bitcoin standard, and then, you know, those communities just kind of start to prosper, you know, whether it's smaller countries, third world countries that have a little bit more room to take risks like El Salvador and Argentina. And then eventually like the US will catch on, at least I hope so.
Yeah.
To the point where it's like, all right, you know, everything here is still okay. Maybe US isn't as dominant of a power, but I think, you know, as far as like, you know, starting a business and kind of, you know, where things are right now, the US is still very advantageous. Other countries are making themselves more advantageous now, but, you know, I think that's just kind of par for the course, right? I mean, when you're the top dog, everybody kind of tries to come at your neck a little bit, right?
For sure. And, you know, I guess my message, I'm a maximalist, that's whatever, but my message to the people who are kind of cranky or they're always doom and gloom about the ETFs and it's not the right way to use Bitcoin. You're right. It's true. But my other message is just like, don't buy an asset that was designed to go up forever and just keep increasing in value, a number go up and then complain when that happens and complain how it happens. You know, it's like, this is what you sign up for. It's going to go up. It's going to go crazy. It's going to go, and people are going to use it how you don't want to use it, but there's nothing you can do about it.
100%, right? I mean, I agree with you. Like, I mean, if Bitcoin couldn't survive traditional finance coming in, then Bitcoin was never going to work.
Right.
Out, right. Because it,
right.
It,
exactly. That too. I don't think that Wall Street is capturing Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is capturing Wall Street.
Oh, it's Wall Street's favorite asset right now, right?
Of course, the evidence is there. Yeah, for sure. I don't know if that's a good thing. It's going to come with some. It's going to. Well, it is good. It is a good thing, but I don't know if it's going to be all smooth sailing while it's finishing the job.
Yeah, I guess time will have to tell on that one. But I mean, I'm optimistic for the future. Like, I definitely think that, you know, the more money that's getting dumped in, right? I mean, that's just beneficial for Bitcoin companies building on Bitcoin or building, you know, things Bitcoin adjacent, right? I mean, because now it's like, hey, you know, we have this BlackRock ETF. It adds more validity. More venture capital money will come in. I think it's just like overall, you know, I mean, even though like it's not a good vehicle for an average pleb to go and purchase it, and, you know, they're going to try to scoop up as much of it as they can, right? At the end of the day, like, you don't, like, I don't really trust the SEC to, you know, go and be forensic accountants and make sure that BlackRock is purchasing all of that. And, you know, I know there's been a couple ETFs that have put out their wallets so you could see that their proof of reserves, that they're actually purchasing the Bitcoin. I imagine there's going to be some players trying to, you know, teeter the edge on there. I don't know how successful that would be, but at the end of the day, I think, like, you know, it's another touch point for the average person, and it adds some validity to what we've all already known about Bitcoin, and that's, you know, it's going to be kind of taken over.
You know, you made me think, I just have to get this in, that BlackRock could be the new Mt. Gox.
No, I think it's, the risk there is a little smaller in that sense. I think BlackRock becomes more of the...
When you have a concentration of it, that's all I'm saying. You have a concentration in one place.
I'm not worried they're going to lose it. I'm worried they're going to maintain it so well that they're going to have, it's just going to give them extra power. I don't know if it's going to be power over the Bitcoin network, because it's designed to be resistant to some sort of attack or some sort of, you know, try to restrict payments or control the hash rate. But it can control the minds of the Bitcoin community, and people can grow to become almost dependent on it. Like, oh, we can't do anything that would upset BlackRock, because if they sell the Bitcoin, it dumps the price. You know, it's like, it's, I think we talked about this previously, but it's, beware of the God candle, not because the God candle's not great, but it's like, whatever caused the God candle, like in 2021, it was Elon buying Tesla, right? And then as soon as Elon had one bad thing to say about Bitcoin and say that it was bad for the environment, that's all it took to make the God candle go the other way. So I'm just saying, like, whatever makes Bitcoin go up, that's BlackRock. And they're the ones maintaining that high price, right? Like, what allegiance is that going to make a lot of people feel they owe it, a company like that?
Yeah, no, 100%. And I, you know, I think to that point too, I think it, what we saw last cycle, right, was a lot of paper Bitcoin being bought, right? I mean, like BlockFi, Celsius, like a lot of these companies, FTX, obviously, coming in and not actually buying Bitcoin. Now, the SEC, like, or the ETFs are regulated by the SEC. I don't know, like, enough about it to, I guess, like, really say that they wouldn't be able to, or that they won't be buying everything that they're saying. But I do think that, you know, there is a potential chance. Like, I don't really necessarily trust the SEC to have the wherewithal to be like, hey, we're going to track this. There's going to be forensic accountants that are, you know, well-versed enough to track this on the blockchain to know that, you know, BlackRock is buying.
Right. I think, I think that you're right. It's definitely not impossible. And like, there's so much room in the government, obviously, and between them and Wall Street for corruption. However, it will be, I understand it enough to say, it will be difficult enough that their attack or that their negligence will probably not come from there, because that would be the harder way to do it. I think they'll just do other things. I think they'll probably goose the price a little bit with other means. But
yeah,
I guess it's a wait and see situation. But yeah, there's the risk is always there.
100%, right? And that's why you had to buy it outside of the ETF. And
sure, you know, that's the only way to do it sovereignly.
Yeah. Yeah, but it'll be an interesting cycle this cycle, because yeah, like I said, I think that the price was kind of suppressed last cycle with all the paper Bitcoin being bought. So I don't know if I really believe that 69K was really like supposed to be the top of last cycle. So yeah, we'll see.
That's another rabbit hole.
So it was supposed to be. It was written in the code, you know.
Yeah.
I have to ask, this made me think of a stupid mic interjection, but if there's a God candle, you said it can go the other way. Is that called the devil candle?
No, could be.
Yeah, I don't know. I think somebody had some memes for it the other day. It was like this, the red God candle or the false God candle or something.
the Antichrist candle.
I don't know.
That's cool.
Well, okay. What is it? God giveth as he taketh awayeth or something like that?
Right. The God candle, there's no, I guess there's no requirement that the God candle's green.
Yeah.
The God candle is a woman. The God candle is my God candle. Anyway.
But yeah, speaking of green candles, Brandon.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for coming on tonight. This was a dope conversation. Where do people go? Where are you going to send them if they want to hear more of your macro insights or your Bitcoin insights? Are you ever going to combine those two, or are you going to keep them separate?
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm trying to think. I'm tossing out the idea around of putting it all in one feed. But I mean, you could check out my YouTube. I've got like, I upload mostly just my Bitcoin ones there. You just search Green Candle. If you want to listen to both podcasts, State of Bitcoin and Macro Insights, wherever you get podcasts, Fountain, Spotify, all that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, follow me on Twitter at Green Candle IT. Green Candle was taken. So if you guys can get a hold of that guy and let him know that I need it. That's probably the best place to find me. And then, yeah, if you find me on Twitter, I got my link tree there, so you can find everything else through there.
Awesome, dude. Thanks for coming on.
Fellas, thanks for having me, man. It was a blast.
Yeah, man. I wanted to get into a lot more, because this is a good one. And you have a lot of great insights that I haven't thought about.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, hey, I guess I can always come back on and chat with you fellas whenever.
For sure. Maybe that's what we usually have to do. We usually have to have a second conversation to get into the more interesting Bitcoin stuff, theories.
100%.
Cool, dudes. I'll cut it. Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!